All right, we are continuing our journey through the Hebrew alphabet, and we are beginning with letter number 3. It is called Gimel. Gimel. Funny, funny word. What does the word Gimel actually mean? I know we call it that letter. Well, I'll cut to the chase. The Torah uses it in 3 different contexts. The first is probably the one that most people are familiar with. And that is when you bestow kindness to somebody, you give of yourself, you're benevolent, you're called a gomel chesed, or gemilut chasadim, is the bestowing of kindness. So the first connotation, the first meaning of the word gimel is related to giving or bestowing. There is a second word, however, and that is the word which most people do not know about. And that is, the Torah tells us that Avraham, when he had his child Yitzchak, so the Torah tells us that he made a party. When did he make this party? Yes, most of us are thinking for his bar mitzvah. Nope, that is not correct. You say earlier. Okay, then it must have been for his bris. Of course, you have a party for his bris. That is incorrect as well. He made a party when Yitzchak was weaned from nursing from his mother. He made a party. I don't know when exactly that was, but let's say it was, certainly by age 2, he made a big party for Yitzchak being weaned. Now, just as an aside, it's the only weaning party in the entire Torah that I'm aware of. It's got to have some significance, but let's just leave it at that for now. So you have the first definition of gimel is to give or bestow. The second is to be weaned. And then comes the third word, which maybe many of you might know, is related to the word gamal. Gamal is a camel. Okay, so seems as a bunch of random disjointed definitions for the same word. For us to really appreciate what gimel is all about, we actually have to ask a second question. And that is, Judaism has has an abundance of convergences of the number 3. The letter Gimel, its numerical value is 3. That's the Gematria, Robin. That's your chart in terms of the number system. There you go. Number 3, Gimel, is matching with the number 3. There are many 3s in the Torah. For example, we have the 3 patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We have the 3 classifications of Jews, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. Right? You have the priest, you have the Levite, and you have plain old Joe me. You have the Torah itself is divided into Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim, the 5 books of Moses, the books of the prophets, and the books of the writings. You have the fact I mentioned early on that Hashem, Torah, and Yisrael, God, the Torah, and the Jewish people are all bound up together as one. 3 parts to your soul. Maybe we'll do a series on that someday. 3 parts to your soul. The 3 most classic ones are nefesh, ruach, neshama. 3 different sections of your soul. When somebody says to you, how holy is God? You say, kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. Holy, holy, holy is God. There are 3s everywhere. In fact, the Talmud in Tractate Shabbos tells us that what makes Torah unique is the following. There's a 3-part Torah that was given to a 3-part nation through the 3rd-born child on the 3rd day in the 3rd month since the Exodus. That's the cryptic statement in the Talmud. A lot of 3s flying around. What does this have to do with anything? So it gets to the core of what is the function of the number 3. Well, let's take a step back. As always, to appreciate going forward, you sometimes have to take a step back. So the number 1, the Aleph, so to say, was the example of ultimate perfection, which only exists with God. God is the only one in the world, in the universe. The number 2 represented duality, things that were not seemingly one and the same, and on the surface seem to be incompatible with each other. They seem to be opposites. One is oneness, ultimate perfection. Two is duality and incompatibility. Comes along the number three and teaches us a tremendous lesson. Three is the ability to blend the contrasts into a more perfect entity. Not like number two that says there's one and there's two, and they're maybe connected, but they're not joining. The number three neutralizes the dissimilarity and unites them into a lasting, more wholesome unit. If I can use English words, three represents integration, which is higher level than either one, which is alone, or two, which is divided. Three is where all of it becomes integrated into a whole. Let's use an example that really illustrates this. Let's analyze this in relation to the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Let's talk about their personalities, their traits. Abraham, the first of our patriarchs, what was he known for? What was the characteristic that he really established himself amongst the leaders of the world and ultimately the founding of our nation? He excelled in the trait called chesed, kindness. This was all about where he went around the region. He provided hospitality, the famous story of him opening the tent to the three travelers, didn't know that they were angels. He was focused on giving to others. Avraham is all about chesed, bestowing kindness. But you have to be very, very careful, folks, because pure chesed, pure giving, giving, giving can be destructive. Even though it's a positive trait, if you take it to the extreme, it can be very destructive. Think about a parent who gives nonstop to the child. Every time the child asks for something, the answer is always yes, and you give and you give and you give. You spoil that child. There are no boundaries, and ultimately, that child remains totally dependent on the parent because all the parent does is consistently shovel in whatever the child needs. The example is we always ask God for the goodness called rain. But if there's no end to it, if it's a constant barrage of water, that's no longer called rainfall. That's called a flood. That's not good. One of the incestuous relationships that the Torah prohibits, well, they're all prohibited, but one in particular that the Torah identifies, it actually uses this word that it's an abomination, but it uses the word chesed. It's too much kindness. Can you imagine such a thing? Perhaps that's the reason where Avraham, who is to the nth degree the trait of chesed, had only one of his two sons stay within the fold. One of the sons, Yishmael, had to be sent away. It wasn't going to work. It doesn't work in its purest sense for everyone or everything. So while, yes, Avraham represents chesed to the nth degree, if we can, put him all the way on the extreme right side. Now let's move to patriarch number two. You have Yitzchak, Isaac. Isaac's trait is very different than his father's. Where Avraham was all about focused on everyone else, Isaac's trait was all about self-sacrifice. It was a much more focus internally. He's the one who was willing to sacrifice, be allowing himself to be sacrificed by his father. He is the only patriarch who never left the land of Israel because it was his. He didn't go around from place to place to place. That was not the modality that Yitzchak functioned in. He represents, if Avraham is chesed, Yitzchak represents the other extreme to the opposite side called din, strict justice, gevura, inner strength, not about reaching across to someone else. but it's a focus inward of how I can develop and give of myself totally. But just as chesed, if it's taken to the nth degree, can be destructive, pure din, pure justice, can also be too restrictive, where the rules and limitations become constricting to people. It's the concept of din is based on you have to earn it. The word din means judgment. I have a legal right to something. I go ahead, if I am wronged, somebody, you know, does damage to me, I have a legal right to demand payment because it's earned, because you did something that belonged to me. It's all based on earning, deserving. There's no concept of freebies. I'm giving to you. I don't want anything, says Din. I don't want any freebies. Either I earn it or I don't get it. That's a very exacting, strict kind of structure. But that's Yitzchak. No handouts, no freebies. He always asked himself, did I earn this? Well, again, using the analogy of rain. Rain, if you don't deserve a single drop and you get none of it, it's called a drought. You have it on both ends. You have too much chesed is a flood. Having the requirement of earning every little aspect of it, it can become a drought. Here also, Yitzchak has two sons and one of them rebels. That's the son Esau. Only Yaakov is able to handle this. So if you have these two patriarchs, they really represent the two extremes of two very important traits. Comes along patriarch number three, Jacob. And Jacob becomes the synthesis of both. His trait is known as either Emet, truth, or Torah. Depending on which version, you'll see they're really one and the same. The previous two traits, which seemed to be disconnected with nothing in common. In fact, they seemed opposite. Avraham's chesed is give, give, give. Yitzchak's din is all about inside, inside, inside. They seem to have nothing in common. If I tell you, I'll give you an example. If I tell you two what seem to be contradictory statements, I say to you, I'm coming to work on Wednesday. And then a little while later, I say, I am not coming to work on Wednesday. I think most of us would say, I've lost my mind. Quarantine has already affected him. He doesn't know if he's coming or going. He probably doesn't even know what day of the week it is. But the concept of number three is where I can synthesize, because the truth is, it can all be one and the same. How can I be coming and not coming? Watch. What if I told you and I qualified it and I said, yes, I'm coming to the office in the morning, but I'm not staying and I'm going to be leaving in the afternoon. So I'm not going to be in the office. Both statements can be true, even though on the surface they couldn't be. The trait of Emet, truth, is the ability to know how and when to utilize each of the traits. In fact, in Hebrew, the word for character traits are midot. Well, that's a borrowed term. The literal translation of the word midah means measurement. Midot are measurements. That's a funny term for character development and character traits. No, it's not. Because every single character trait, you have to measure. Is this the appropriate time? Is this the appropriate place? Is this the appropriate amount? How, when, how much? You have to measure it. The only way to do that is if you can understand the global picture, see the whole story. Even the word emet, truth, has this connotation. The three letters that make up the word emet, the first letter being aleph, the first letter of the alphabet. The last letter in the word is Tav, which is the last letter in the Hebrew alphabet. And the middle letter is the letter Mem, which is the middle letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So I remember as a kid, I had a counselor who, needless to say, I fibbed my way through something. I got in trouble and I lied all about it. And he caught me. And he caught me. He didn't punish me terribly, but he taught me this lesson. He said to me, "You have to tell the truth." And I said, "Well, I did somewhat." And of course, I wasn't willing to admit it. You know, I was 37 at the time. I was a young kid. So he says to me, "Tzvi, you have to understand, emet is truth because it starts with an aleph and it ends with a tav and it has the mem in the middle. If it's going to be truthful, it's got to be from beginning to end all the way through the middle. That's truth." I thought it was a beautiful insight. I made a note of it mentally. Didn't change my behavior for that summer, but I made a note, and here we are many years later, and I'm using this example. But if you think about it on a deeper level, even the word emet really has this connotation, because the aleph represents oneness. That's the spirituality world. The tav, going again to the other extreme, is as far from spirituality as you possibly can imagine. It's literally A and Z. It's the farthest end. Tav may actually be the letter that represents physicality at some point. And then you have mem, right there in the middle. The balance between the physical and the spiritual. That's what the three, the emet, the trait of truth, or the trait of Torah, really represents. That ability to say, no, it's not all spiritual and it's not all physical. No, it's not all chesed, kindness, and it's not all pure din, justice. It's in the middle. Perhaps this is the reason I mentioned to you the other day that the letter that the on the second day of creation, which was representative of the letter Bet, did not have the phrase Ki Tov, that God commented that it was good. It was missing because it was all about division, divisive, right? Creating those differentiations. However, if you stuck around a little longer and you read the next paragraph in the Torah, you will see that in day number three of creation, it not only says it once, it says it twice. God comments Ki Tov twice on the third day. Why? Because it was good in its own right of what was done on day three. But more importantly, three now was able to fix and rectify the disconnectedness of day two and unify it on a higher level. By taking what was in two that seemed to be so disconnected, day three was able to put it back into something even greater. Perhaps that's the reason why, whereas in contrast to Avram and Yitzchak, who had only one of their two sons follow the path and one had to leave and rebel, all of Jacob's 12 sons became the 12 tribes of Israel. That's who we are. Nobody left the fold. Everybody stayed true. Because when you reach that medium, you find that balance, it's all good. It's not the oneness of God, because that's out of our realm, but here you've created the diversity, the duality of two, and brought it and harnessed it into a new and higher level. Some even suggest that if you take Jacob's 12 children, 12 sons, and you throw Yaakov into it as well, it's now a total of 13. Well, 13 is the numerical value of the word echad, one. Aleph is one, chet is eight, dalet is four. 1, 8, 4 is 13. The 13 of Yaakov and his 12 sons really represent taking that oneness, not the oneness we talk about godliness, because that's out of our realm, but it's bringing that oneness here into our world by capitalizing and harnessing all that the duality of this world has. It's not for no reason that amongst the three patriarchs, the sages say that Jacob, is considered Bechir Sheba Avot, the choicest of all the patriarchs. He was of the highest level. Emet, truth means knowing how, when, how much to use each trait to strike that balance between chesed and din. What it does is it creates stability and equilibrium. For those of you who know anything in terms of engineering, you know that a chair cannot survive on one leg and it cannot have any level of stability with two legs. But once you add that third leg, it becomes a chair. It becomes a bar stool that has stability and equilibrium. It is for the same reason why if a person practices his behavior and accustoms him or herself to do things, the Talmud says that if you do it 3 times, it's considered a habit. It's considered a form that this is your new behavior. Why 3 times? Same reason, because now it becomes your stability. You did it once, it may have been a fluke. You did it a second time, maybe you got lucky. But if you do it 3 times and you really focused in on why and how you did it, that becomes your habit. So now, let's go back to our original question. We asked about what does this word or name Gimel mean? Well, I told you that on the one hand, it means to give, to bestow. That matches up with Chesed. That's your Avraham. But then I told you something that seems so random, and that was it means to wean the child. Well, what is that all about? Well, that's a stage at where a child is now stable enough to earn on its own its nourishment by itself. It can feed itself. It doesn't have to be totally dependent on the mother. We can understand why this is the only weaning party in the Torah, specifically for Yitzchak, specifically for Isaac. Why? Because where Avraham, whose trait of chesed, he finally gets to this point of where he recognizes that Isaac is not a clone of him. He is not 100% dependent. In fact, he's now independent. He's now independent with his own trait, not of chesed, but of din. Nobody else has the right to say that because going forward, once you have a Yaakov, who's the synthesis of all of this, we all have all the traits. Avraham, who's chesed all the way to the right, now is at a point where his child is weaned. He makes a party to say he's now an independent source. Yitzchak has the right to say, I don't want freebies. I'll do this on my own. Strict judgment. Therefore, what Gimel represents is the glue that unified the two opposites of giving, chesed, and weaning, which is all about din. It's not surprising, we're not studying Aramaic, but just make a note of it, that the Aramaic word used in the Talmud for a bridge that connects two things is called a gamla. Just make a note of it. It's the same word, gimel, because that's what this is. The gimel is that bridge, that glue that takes two things that seem to be disconnected and is able to forge them into a strong, stable whole. Perhaps now we can understand the third definition of why gamal, a camel. What does a camel have to do with any of this? Well, we know that every creature that God created has a unique characteristic. We talked about this when we talked about Adam naming each animal. The fact that he was able to use the Hebrew language and understood what the essence of each creature was, and he gave it an appropriate name. So what does gamal, the camel's unique characteristic? Well, it has the unique attribute of not dehydrating, right? It's able to go very long distances without having to stop for water. But that's only if you filled it up originally before you left. You cannot expect your Prius, or no matter what vehicle you have, I don't care how electric and how gas efficient it is, if you don't fill it up first or give it a charge, you ain't going diddly. You have to fill up the camel first. It may drink who knows how many gallons. But that first initial fill up with water represents the initial chesed of being given the water. It will suck it in. It will drink it all up. Now, once it had that initial chesed, we'll call it the Avraham mode, now it can achieve independence and doesn't need anything from anyone. Now it moves into the din modality of where I don't need it. I can earn on my own. I got it from here. And once it reaches that level, now it can do an even higher chesed level for you by being able to travel and take you across a desert that no other creature could do. So it took the two disparate traits of being given the water initially, it becoming independent, not needing it. A horse is dead in 2 days. It's not going to survive in the Sahara Desert because every other creature needs the constant chesed, constant giving, more, 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 more. It doesn't know how to become independent in this regard. Only the camel can do that. And once it forges together both aspects, now it can achieve that higher level of chesed to take you where you need to go. As a last point before I run off, it's very important now we understand the fact that when Eliezer, Abraham's loyal servant, was sent on a mission to find a wife for Yitzchak, what did he do? The Torah doesn't tell us trivial information for no reason. The Torah tells us that Eliezer took with him a bunch of camels. Okay, why? And if he took donkeys and he took horses, who cares? The point is that he needed some way to travel. But the Torah tells us he took 10 camels. What's so significant? On the simple level, is because this was a test. He was going to use this as an opportunity to test and see if this girl would be willing to give so much water to the camels, not just to him after traveling, but to go ahead and to be so full of chesed, so full of kindness, to not only give him to drink, but for his camels also. But what you see now is that it's so much more, because Yitzchak represents the other extreme of din, of where everything needs to be earned. No freebies, no chesed, I got this on my own. What kind of girl does he need? He doesn't need another girl like Din. He doesn't need a girl who's got the same compatible DNA as his. He needs the opposite. He needs a girl who is all chesed. Why does he bring the camels? Because that's what this is all about. He needed to get a girl for Yitzchak on the extreme side of chesed so that they can produce a Yaakov that is the synthesis of both and therefore be able to bring to a higher level. That's why it's number three. This is the long and short of why Gimel is called Gimel and why it's significant and it's number three. What we'll do, God willing, tomorrow night is we're going to talk about the form and structure of the letter and see how this teaches us even more. We good? Unless you have something absolutely burning for clarity, we'll take questions tomorrow night, but I got to jump on the next call. All right?
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.